Hello and welcome back to Game, Develop, Repeat, the podcast where we talk about a game that I love, what makes it special, and what we, as game developers, can learn from it. Today we are going back to the 90s. We're going back to, I believe it's 1999 in North America when this game released, and we're going to compare it to another 90s game a little bit, a game that came out 2 years earlier. If we base it off of Japan release dates, they released 2 years apart. Things get a little weird when we start talking about when the translations hit America and all that good stuff. What game is this? It is my favorite Pokemon game, and it is not a Pokemon game. It is Jade Cocoon. So why am I calling this game a Pokemon game when it is not? Well, I cannot help but compare them. They came out around the same time for me, and more importantly, they are both creature collectors. They are both games where you get creatures, you control them, you train them, you work with them, you make them more powerful, you do all these things to make them a better part of your team, and then you go out into the world with your creatures. Now, here's the difference. Pokemon, you can't mash two creatures together. You don't get all these visual changes, and you don't have these cool little graphs that kind of show you what the creature is good at, what the creature is bad at, where its strengths and weaknesses lie. You don't get all that weird, slight, like, genetic modification vibe. It's not as much of a creature creator, and Jade Cocoon has just enough of that element to just suck me straight in. I'm like, this is interesting. This is fascinating. I want to play with this. And it adds this weird complexity and charm to the game because the creatures now are not just a cute creature that you've been training, giving the right abilities to, which is one way of customizing your creatures. And boy, that's impactful, right? Like, I'm not about to say that Pokemon doesn't make me connected to the creatures that I'm using. It very clearly does. Partially because of the length of the experience. I think Jade Cocoon is a significantly shorter game, but the part that interests me, maybe even more than the creature combinations that you can do, where you kind of mash two creatures together. I think it's been so long since I played this game. I believe that was how it worked. You kind of combine two creatures to get something else out of it. And honestly, I could be mangling this because it's been so long since I played it. But the part that stands out to me about this game, the part that sticks in my memory, is the overall aesthetic. And I've had a conversation with one of my family members about this sort of thing before, where he always says, I wish there was a dark Pokemon. I wish there was a Pokemon, like a modern day Pokemon, that doesn't have all the cuteness, all the charm, all the sweetness, and like the child angle. Like it's made to be kid friendly. I wish there was a Pokemon that got a little bit more gritty, that got a little bit more like, not necessarily like violent gritty, just not so cute and cheerful, right? And this is the go-to. This is the game we always end up talking about when we have that conversation, at least briefly. I know there are some modern games that have done similar things, right? There are some modern games that have done some different stuff, some different angles with it, but something just hasn't quite scratched that itch yet. There hasn't been a Pokemon like creature collector style game that really nails that feeling. So let's talk a little bit more about Jade Cocoon, because that'll push us in the direction of the kind of thing I think I'm looking for when thinking about that. It has this otherworldly, sort of dreamy aesthetic to it. I say dreamy, the dreams do play a role in this game. It is a very weird vibe. It's bizarre. It's a little bit more, Can I call it more anime than Pokemon? It's definitely a weirder anime than Pokemon. You know what I'm saying? Like it is a less direct, easy to follow world. Like it feels a little bit more supernatural. I think that's the word I'm looking for. It feels a little darker, a little more grim, a little more supernatural. The stakes are higher in a weird way. The stakes in Pokemon feel very I'm trying to accomplish this goal and I'm going to do everything I can to accomplish this goal. And then bad stuff happens along the way. Absolutely. Something about Jade Cocoon leaves me with the impression that everything is just messed up. Like everything is just a little wrong and I've got to go help, you know? Like a lot of weight is on my shoulders. It is a very real problem. There are real consequences to things. And I am like genetically modifying these creatures in order to move forward through this world. And not in like a bad way, but it's weird. It's a weird game. It just feels a bit more unnerving throughout the game. And it's so interesting to me to find out that these games came out at like the same time. And Jade Cocoon kind of didn't carry through in future bits, in future installments. The second game doesn't quite work for me. It's got this narrator that I don't like. It's kind of got this like overly cutesy thing going on that just does not lay in for me. The narrator is a little annoying. The combat system doesn't work the way I really want it to. And that the last time I played, I was playing Jade Cocoon 2. So I don't actually have, like, it could be that some of this is nostalgia, but I like the plot for Jade Cocoon 1 a lot more. The plot feels odd, for sure, but there is like a, yeah, there's, oh, wait, that might be a spoiler. Okay, there's a lot going on in the plot in terms of like the character's personal narrative and how they're interacting with the world, and it's sort of a story, a coming-of-age story, in the same way that Pokemon is. It's got some of that coming of age element to it, but it's just from this much heavier angle. And I really appreciate that. Now, there are all these things that they're doing in this game that add to it, that add to the experience. There's this system that you sort of have to explore in terms of customizing your creatures. And there's, well, you know what? We'll get into it. So it's got this system to customize your creatures. It's got these little graphs. It's got these little sort of elemental traits that interact with each other. And I love the idea, the underlying idea here of giving your player something to explore, something to experiment with. In the same way that Front Mission 3 gives you all of these, I know I'm bringing it back to Front Mission 3, it's on my brain right now. The Front Mission 3 gives you all of these mech parts and stuff to equip your mechs with, right? Pokemon gives you, let's use Pokemon, Pokemon gives you all of these different moves to assign to your Pokemon. And this game gives you all of these different ways to combine creatures, to change their powers. So in that, and their appearance, by the way, sorry, it does change their appearance as far as I remember it, because I remember being very interested in that, in making them have different looks and making them have different powers and giving them different like little modular parts to their body to some extent. It's sort of a weird system. And I'm not entirely sure it was how it was implemented. I have a feeling if I went back and like tried to do another playthrough of it, I would start to understand the implementation a little bit and it would be a little less mysterious to me. And I'd be like, oh, okay, this body part changes when you combine these things and like that sort of a thing. But as a kid in the 90s, you play this game and you're like, oh my God, when I combine these two creatures, it gives this one a horn, or oh, it gives it this whole different look, or oh, it changes this color or whatever, right? And you're like, this is insane. I don't know how they did this. This is a real world that I'm interacting with. And this creature can turn into this other thing. And there's just this magic behind it, because there's this new system that you can play with and experiment with and learn about. And I think that's something it's really easy to miss. I think it's really easy to forget that people love learning about new systems, because sometimes we look at something and we're like, we've got to hand them all the details so they don't get frustrated. But it's only frustrating if it's frustrating. You know what I'm saying? Like, people love learning about new things. And if you make it an easy process, if you make it something where they can just hop in and start to understand it, and they discover a new thing every couple minutes, if you make a game system where they get to have this feeling of discovery and they don't run into this thing where they're just stuck against something and they can't discover anything new forever. Think about the times you get frustrated when you're trying to learn something. It's not when you're discovering new things. It's when you're trying to figure something out. You're trying desperately to understand the next part of this, and you're doing it for so long that you reach a point where you go, I'm never going to understand this, and you start like losing hope about it. A game that gives you a system that you can just play with that doesn't block you out. It just says, hey, play with this, explore this, see what you can do, have fun with it. You're going to discover new things. Even if the things that you discover aren't that useful, you're discovering them, right? This is one of the strengths of Minecraft, and especially old school, like alpha beta Minecraft, when there was no like, I don't know how long it stayed like this, but when there was no guide to it, right? When there was no like direction of build this next, build this next, build this next, you were just experimenting and finding things. That's one of its, you know, I would argue that that is a strength, but maybe that's a me specific thing. But I've talked about this before even, I think. I think this is one of the strengths of Stardew. There's a lot of things in Stardew that you go and you discover. There's a lot of things where the world prompts you to go figure something out. It's like, hey, go figure out how to catch this fish. Go see where you can get this fish. And then you start finding out, oh, these fish are here. These fish are here. And there are things in the world that you can, there are books you can find that tell you where the fish might be. There are people you can talk to. You can give people gifts and you'll discover what they like and don't like. And then you're like, why does this character like eating rocks? And if you know who I'm talking about, then you know who I'm talking about. And it's I think, one of my funniest little, one of the funniest jokes in that game to me is the fact that a character misunderstands rocks as food. And the first time I saw that, I was like, wait, is that a bug? And I don't think it was. I'm pretty sure it was intentional. I'm pretty sure it was left in on purpose. Okay, anyway, now that we've got to have a Stardew tangent every time, don't we? Now that we've covered that, I think this idea of having things to explore, systems to explore, world to explore, all this good stuff in a way where you don't get stuck is beautiful. And I love the way that Jade Cocoon implements it with like weird little graphs and stuff. It's not that intense, but it is super interesting. It does pull you in. I do remember as a kid being a little overwhelmed by it because it has a kind of a technical appearance to it. Pokemon, as an example, is more direct. You just go, oh, put this move on this person. Super clean, super clear, done. Jade Cocoon, you get the impression from looking at it, you're like, oh, this is going to be a little hard to use sometimes, right? Like maybe you glance at it and you go, oh, this seems difficult. This seems intimidating. Maybe, but I don't know. It's a cool system, even if it does initially seem just a little overwhelming. And that might be something that could be presented. I like it, though. I was going to say it might be something that could be presented differently, but I remember liking it. And as soon as I started to understand it, I was like, cool. And it's I think part of it was that there were consequences, right? Like if I combined my creature with some other creature and lost certain powers, I'd be like, oh, no, no good, not fun. I think I need to play the Persona games. I think that's what I'm realizing here, because I think the Persona games have something like this, if I'm remembering correctly. I remember watching some gameplay of Persona 5, and there was some kind of a Persona, was it a combiner? I'm not sure, but I think it was. I think you like combine Personas to get things. I feel like I should probably play that. I feel like that is a series that I should probably play. Maybe I'll wait for the next one, because I kind of spoiled Persona 5 for myself by watching like all the gameplay, because I didn't want to do the grind, you know? I wasn't vibing with grinding at that point in my life. Okay, where are we here? What else was I talking about? A little bit of choice adds a lot of potential, allow players to explore systems. Yeah, I've covered my bullet points. Those were my bullet points about this game. I don't have a ton to say this week. Probably because I was doing taxes this weekend. So I'm a little tired out. The other thing I was doing, let's go ahead and do my check-in. The other thing that I was doing this weekend was looking into formal education. I was looking into options for more formal education in computer science specifically. Rather than game development, I'm more interested in the broad strokes because I feel that it's going to be a more evergreen education. If I learn the fundamentals of computer science, I can easily apply that to a bunch of different things. Fundamental theory is a big thing for me. I love fundamental theory. I run into that a lot with like music stuff. I'm very interested in the fundamentals, and then a lot of the time I'm like, oh yeah, the point is to play music, right? Like, there was a period of time where I had to remind myself of that. So anyway, I'm looking into more formal education. I'm not going to give a bunch of details on that, but basically I'm trying to find reasonable options for potentially a bachelor's degree, maybe certifications. There's a bunch of stuff I'm looking at. And then what is the other stuff I've got to check in on this week? Still been developing on stream. If you've been watching, you've seen it. You know what's going on. Playing some games. I think I'm probably going to play Celeste on Monday. That's been on my mind. We'll see. We'll see. And then keep working on the dev stuff. I need to put out some stuff for the Ko-fi, whatever I said I'm going to call it from now on, the coffee. I need to put out some stuff for that. You can expect that this week. I'm running a little slow on it because I kind of forgot about all the obligations that I had this past week. And then we'll have some fun stuff going on there. Anyway, I'm basically this week is learning how much I have to learn. The past couple weeks have been a refresher on, oh yeah, you have a lot to learn. And I think the Twitch streaming helped a lot with that, kind of getting myself out in public and going, okay, here is me developing and having people pop in there and go, hey man, what are you doing? What are you doing with this? This is a little bit wild. Like, why don't you just use this function? And then I go, what? That exists? And then I start using it. I'm like, oh, great. And I just think there's so much room for me to learn stuff by just going through some fundamental courses and things. And I think I'm at a point where that information will stick way better than it would have in the past. It would be easy to hear me talk about this and go, oh, it sounds like he should have done a bunch of coursework before he started making things. It sounds like he was making things inefficiently. It sounds like the good move to do is to study a ton and then go back and then start making things. And I disagree with that wholeheartedly. With my entire heart, I disagree with that. I think that it is essential that you make things either while you are learning the skill or before. I think you need to explore. I think you got to discover things in the same way we were talking about discovering things in Jade Cocoon. I've always got to tie everything into video games, don't I? In the same way that we were talking about discovering things in a game, in Minecraft, in Stardew, it is more fun. It is more emotionally impactful. And the higher the emotional impact, the more it's going to stick with you. Think about the memories that haunt you every night. They were emotionally impactful. You're trying to fall asleep and you're like, oh, that was cringe. Yeah. That had an impact on you emotionally. So if you learn a lesson and it's an emotional moment for you, if you go, oh my God, I can't believe I spent 3 months coding this way and now I know that I can do it this other way, boy, is that going to stick in your head. It is going to lock in so much quicker than if we went the other way around. If we just learned about it and then ignored that information for like 6 months because we're just studying more things and more things and more things and more things, just reading and listening and all this, then you just have all this information you haven't done anything with and you don't know what to use it for, but you feel like you should be able to use it, right? I feel like for me, that's not the angle of approach. For me personally, the angle of approach is constant interaction with the material. Use the material ideally simultaneously with some like technical and theoretical study. Ideally, in a very ideal world, you are learning about the thing as you are using it, as you are doing it, as you are putting it into practice and getting good with it and learning how to manipulate it and all that good stuff. Sometimes you can't do that. And in that case, a lot of the time I just jump in and then see when I hit a roadblock and then start learning about that and then slowly learn to make it more efficient and so on and so on. There's going to be blind spots with that. It's going to be a problem, but that is a more effective learning style for me than sitting down and studying books like crazy, you know? Does that make sense? It's a bit of a tangent, definitely a bit of a tangent, but I'm learning how much I have to learn, and that's huge for me. I think it's a moment we all have to have where we go, okay, I've made a lot of progress. I'm doing good. And then, oh, wow. Okay, so I am still doing good. I also have a lot to learn. So let's keep doing well and let's start learning some new stuff on top of that. And that's the angle that I'm going at this from. And that's why I'm looking into some formal education stuff. ¶¶ I've got a couple questions for you this week that might inspire some ideas that might get you thinking, might make you go, maybe I want to work on this project. Maybe I want to explore this concept. Maybe I just want to write out a design for this. I don't want to work on the project. It's too big, but maybe I can just write a very crude idea, a very crude design, some basic gameplay principles. Maybe I can just draw a little sketch up, right? Maybe there's a way to make this idea smaller. Anyway, I'm getting on a tangent here. First question. What game do you almost love, but something is off? What game is almost the perfect game for you, but then you go, I don't know, there's just something about it that's not quite right. Can you put your finger on what that thing is? Because the next question is, what would you change in that game? So if you've got something like, oh, you know, Final Fantasy IX is almost the perfect game for me. It's so good. It's so close. But there's just something about the story, and I can't quite pin it down. And what is that story? What is it about it that's not quite doing it for you? Is it the story? What is it? Is it a pacing thing? Is it being slowed down by combat? Is there an item thing you don't like? What is the thing that makes you go, man, I'm going to play Final Fantasy. You know what? Never mind. I don't really want to. I'm not really feeling it. Why don't you want to? What keeps you from revisiting that game? What keeps you from finishing that game? What is it that you would change? And then a follow-up. Is that change feasible, or is it a scope issue? Like if you say, you know, I really like this game. I just wish that it had some big thing that requires you to add art assets absolutely everywhere. Then it's like, maybe it's not feasible, right? Like, is it a feasible change? Or if you're like, I would love to make a version of Pokemon, but instead of Pokemon, it's, and then you have just some wild idea. Is it feasible, right? Is it something that's actually doable? Is it something you have the tools for? And if not, how do you make it feasible? Or is this a game that's just like too far out of reach? Is there a way to reduce the scope? I don't know. Here's an example of a really easy one. Final Fantasy VIII. There's something wrong with that game for me. There's something wrong with that game. And it's the draw system. And we've talked about this before, but what would I change in that game? I would change the draw system. Is it feasible? Absolutely. You can fix the draw system in Final Fantasy VIII. Is it connected to some pretty fundamental gameplay stuff? Yes. Yes, it is. But the majority of the issue with that game is just some balance and like a couple tweaks. And I bet you could fix that. I'm speaking about this from a pretty inexperienced place, honestly. But the team that made that entire game, I bet you if they knew that the draw system was going to be as big of a problem as it was, they could have fixed that draw system in less than a month. That's my bet. That's my guess. I don't know. I wasn't programming for that tech. I don't know. But I think the team that was capable of that full game can probably tweak a few stats and tweak the numbers that you get whenever you draw from an enemy and change the way that it interacts with like the junction system to make it wonderful, right? Like I think there's a few design decisions you can make to fix it. That's the sort of change that I really want. Like that's hard to find, but the games where you just have to make one tiny tweak and then boom, everything is better. That's incredible. And that's good design. And that's a good design challenge. I think there's probably a lot more creative solutions to these problems than we think there are, but I don't think there's always going to be one that is low effort. Like I think some of them are just going to have crazy scope. But if you can find one that has almost no scope, I think there was a video from East Shade Studios where he mentioned something like this. Something about good design being an idea that is not just a good gameplay mechanic, but makes the game more manageable. When he mentioned that, it really stuck with me. And I think that is what I'm getting at with these questions. That's everything I have. I didn't write a tip for this week. I would say explore new tools. That would be my tip for this week for myself. Explore new tools, see what they're capable of. And then go to some theory. Dig in on some of the theory stuff. Don't be afraid of it. Go into some like more traditional learning resources because I think it's a good time for it, for me at least. That's everything I've got for you this week. I'll be streaming Monday, Wednesday, Friday. What time? What time do I do that? 2 p.m. Eastern. I've got the Ko-fi. There's a link in the bottom. You know the deal. You know the drill. I'll see you in the next one. Have a good week. Get out there, make some stuff, and have fun with it. Bye-bye.